Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna.
Got it. Caught! Touchdown! Oh, my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Credit Union, Carry Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars this week begins right now.
Hey there, good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna from the broadcast studio inside Everbank Field in Jacksonville. I'm Brian Sexton. Jeff Loggeman is here. John Osher, the senior writer at Jaguars.com. And, of course, Joe Fortunato. Welcome to the program. Phone number, as always, 800-355-6351 or 355-NFL1. If you are in our calling area. Guys, good evening. It's not night yet. How are you?
Good.
Man, I'm doing great. You know, one thing I was wondering
what
all week long, you know, is that you read different reports about the different players that have gone, because I guess each team, and we're talking draft here, each team is allowed to have a certain number of players come in. And for visits. You know, we're talking draft eligible people. And I don't know what the number is, but you hear the reports of who went to certain teams. I haven't heard anything about who has come to this team.
Have you?
Am I missing something here?
Not much.
Okay.
Not much. That's by design. I mean,
do you know, I remember 1997, I may have said this on the air at one point, but a guy named Seth Payne rolled through with a guy named Tony Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Gonzalez sat in my office, took his shoes off, and hung out, and we talked college basketball because it was March. Nobody came and got him. He was here for like 2 hours. Great guy. Knew he'd be a star. And but of course, no one knew Seth Payne. And that isn't that what they use these visits for more, though, is the guys that you really don't know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, some people say that. But, I mean, I think I know in years past, and we really don't know under the Gene Smith regime, but, I mean, when guys would come in years past, prior to Gene pretty much, you know, taking control of the con, you had a pretty good idea that the ones they brought in were the guys they wanted.
Yeah.
And they ended up being the guys that they would draft. And boy, I mean, Gene Smith, I mean, you know, he reminds me of the World Poker Tour with that one guy who won the ring with the glasses that got the eyes painted on him or whatever.
You know,
I mean,
you
can't, yeah, I mean, you can't get a read on anything. He keeps all of his information very close to the vest, and I think any leaks are punishable by death.
Don't you know, though, he's got every mock draft in the entire blogosphere, internet, all saying Gene Smith looks for character and pass rushing end and Ryan Kerrigan's his man. They're almost to a man. They mention the kind of guy that Gene Smith is looking for, and they plug Ryan Kerrigan in. Don't
mm-hmm.
I just think, well, there's no chance they're taking now because he's got them all fooled somehow.
I don't know.
I don't know, but
I guess they didn't take – my understanding is Tyson was not in for a visit last year. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, they kept so quiet on Tyson that they didn't even send anybody to his – pro day at Cal.
Right.
I mean, I've talked to different guys over there, and they send signals, you know, and sometimes it's all smoke signals. They send guys to other places. They did all their work surreptitiously. No one knew that, you know, they talked to the strength coach, and they did all that stuff away from people's prying eyes, which is why Tyson was such a surprise to so many people. It's why Mel Kiper blew his top.
But oftentimes with the first round guy, you know on that guy without having to do an incredible amount of extensive personal reason, you know.
Well, it turns out we don't know this.
I mean, I just find it interesting, you know, because you know, the more mystery man that you can appear to be as a general manager, I think the more success that you're going to have in the future. John, in Indianapolis, was Polian that secretive, or was he fairly easy to read?
He made Coughlin look loose.
You know, and fans who write The Ozone get tired of hearing about the Colts, but except for the personality, and because Gene is a guy who, you know, isn't, I don't say he's engaging,
mm-hmm.
but he's helpful with the media where he can be. You know, he's a pleasant guy to be around. Bill, obviously, that's not always the case. But except for that, in their approach to football, in their approach to information flow about the draft, there's a lot of similarities between the guys, and that's certainly one of them. Bill was
because Bill, I mean, Bill has a reputation now as
really?
Being a horse's rear end.
Really?
Well, you know, you're
I worked down the hall from him for 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, so you know. I mean,
there's good and bad about the guy. I mean, you know.
But then, it's funny because, you know, you talk to some people that have been around him and know him very well, and they swear up and down how good of a man that he is. And I don't know him exceptionally well, but I have had a chance to talk with him.
Sure.
And he was absolutely wonderful to me. But, you know, I find it always interesting to kind of get a read and to hear about the different personnel men, because, I mean, these are the guys that shape a franchise, mm-hmm. and how each one of them works, how they go about their business. And it's been fun watching Gene in his role over the last couple of years. And I just, you know, I love to learn about those people, because, I mean, if there was an intrigue to any part of the NFL business,
it's
to me, that would be the side of it, because, I mean, that is truly an art form.
And we'll talk, you know, I know we've got a lot of time and a lot of weeks to talk about things. Bill Polian's approach to building the team is fascinating. I don't know Gene as well because I've only been here a few months. But there are certainly some similarities in their fundamental approach, methodically taking players, the best available player theory. The Colts believe strongly in that. So there's some similarities on that front. I will say I've been impressed so far with Gene's approach and his diligence to it.
Nobody's going to outwork him.
No, and it's impressive. It's impressive to be around.
I share a funny story a couple weeks ago. Well, not weeks ago. I guess it was months ago. And there was a get-together, and there were some staff there. And I don't want to say it was all staff. And it was kind of at the end of the year. And there were a couple scouts there, and they shared this story with me about Gene Smith. And Gene's comment to them was, can you imagine how much more work that we could get done if we didn't have to sleep? And I just thought that was hilarious. I said, boy, that is so Coughlin-esque.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I didn't hear Tom say that. Yeah, very similar, yeah.
All right, phone number is 355-NFL-1. We're going to take our first break, but before we do, two quick announcements. The first is that tomorrow night, Team Teal and the Jaguars will be at Palencia. Special teams coordinator Russ Purnell and
Big
Tony
Russ.
Pacelli will be there. That's tomorrow night, April 14th, 6 o'clock at the Palencia Park and Pavilion. Jackson, the cheerleaders. They'll have inflatable games, prizes, autographs. So St. John's County, get ready. Team Teal tomorrow night at Palencia with Coach Purnell and Tony Baselli. And right after this timeout, we will have a Team Teal announcement, a very special Team Teal announcement, because one member of that cadre will be flying to New York and announcing the fourth-round pick of the Jaguars on day 3 of the draft. We'll tell you who that is, where they're from, and continue our conversation. Are we labor-free tonight?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's
just nothing to talk
stick
about.
Away,
labor-free,
away from
and we'll take your calls. Jaguars This Week rolls along on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. More Jaguars This Week now on News Talk Radio WOKV. We told you about Team Teal tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, Palencia Park and Pavilion. Also, giving you a heads up about the Jaguars Bud Light Draft Party presented by PRI Productions. Alumni players, the Roar, the D-Line, Jackson DeVille on hand, draft day, 6:30 in the evening. Now, this is Thursday of draft day, Joe?
Yes.
This is the first night. This is not Saturday. This is Thursday.
Correct.
Because what? First and second round are what?
First round Thursday night.
Second round.
Second and third round.
I don't know how to do it.
Friday.
Second and third then, Friday. Okay.
Right.
And then fourth on Saturday.
And then to finish it up on Saturday.
Right. So
and that's Bud Light what our winner is going to announce.
All right. The Bud Light Draft Day Party is Thursday then, 6:30 at the Market to Town Center between Whiskey River and Sweet. All right. Told you about Team Teal. And they've had a competition for one of their members to win a trip to the NFL draft to assist the Jaguars as they make their fourth-round pick. So the winner will receive 2 round-trip flights to New York City, a one-night stay at a hotel in the big city, 2 tickets to day 3 of the 2011 NFL draft, and, of course, they will make the pick live on television. So do you want to read or do you want me to?
Go ahead.
Andrew Benjamin. From Hudson, Florida. Do you know where Hudson, Florida is?
Do not.
I do not.
A Team Teal member. Now, you had to be a Team Teal
Congratulations,
member.
Congratulations,
Dan. It's over in the Tampa area. It's north of Tampa, north of Newport Richey.
Man.
So you've got Team Teal members all across the state. And Andrew Benjamin will be making the trip to help the Jaguars with their fourth-round pick. So congratulations, Andrew. Good deal there. If you'd like to be a member of Team Teal, you have to have two season tickets and be registered on the website. If you'd like to join, then go to myteamteal.com.
All right, here's the – I want to make sure we got this right. The first round is Thursday, April 28th, and then rounds two and three on Friday – and then Saturday is four rounds four through seven. Just wanted to confirm that we had that right.
Okay.
So no longer Sunday. Sunday is a day of rest.
Okay. You know, last Thursday night, I was in here with Mr. Weaver and Bill Prescott for a conference call with fans, and I just asked the question, how did that go? I mean, from an owner's perspective, what did you think? What was the result of moving it to Thursday night prime time? And he said, unequivocally, hands down, it was one of the smarter decisions they've ever made.
No question. And you know, you wonder, boy, what took them so long to do that? I mean, you just saw the trends with a cable network drawing a blip in the ratings, and ESPN were talking about years ago.
Right.
I mean, heck, they should have done that a long time ago. And what the amazing part is that you've got it on two networks. You got ESPN, and then you have the NFL Network, and they're – heck, we sat in here and we're flipping back and forth.
The NFL Network's coverage is really good.
It is exceptional. First of all, I like Rich Eisen. I love his very wry sense of humor. I think he's an outstanding announcer.
Yeah, great wit.
And Mike Mayock is very rough around the edges. But if you can kind of get past how he says it and just listen to the meat and potatoes, his information is very good. Very, very good. And of course, Charlie Casserly is good. He's been there. He's done that. The NFL Network does a magnificent job.
Do you – is this a – and obviously we've got the lockout kind of painting the situation. It seems kind of subdued. I'm wondering if maybe it seems subdued this year because we don't have all the Tebow calls. We don't have all the people calling and saying, are you going to take Tim? Take Tim. Let's have Tim.
It's old news.
Tim will sell it out. But, you know, last year there was that – I don't want to say pressure, but there was that pressure point where – it was one way or the other. You either wanted him here or you didn't.
Well,
people were not in the middle on that deal, and we don't have that this year, so it almost seems kind of subdued.
Well, and we actually had a call tonight, and he's online. We bring him up.
All right, absolutely.
Because
Mike is in St. Augustine. Mike, how are you tonight?
Good. I enjoy your form. Just a quick question. I was a Jaguar inaugural season, first couple of seasons, ticket holder and all that, you know. And I find that the brain trust, unless there's a con job going on, just to put people in the stadium and put some energy in there, why was Tebow not drafted? I think it's an absolute blunder, unless, of course, they're really trying to deep six the whole franchise and get it moved somewhere else, and there's stuff we don't know that's going on. I'm going to say drafting right. Whole conspiracy, because it's probably the dumbest thing that could have ever happened in the NFL. I'll hang up and listen to you guys defend the indefensible.
Why anybody would want to go back to last year and Tim Tebow, I mean, to me it's old news. Let's get past that. Mike, you don't make a pick based on the belief that you can put fannies in the seats. You may believe that he would have had an impact on ticket sales, but there are many that believe that he would have had no impact. And we talked at length last year and since that point about historically one player has never filled a stadium. There's one thing that fills a stadium and one thing only, and that's winning. And, Mike, if it was such a good idea to have drafted Tim Tebow, why is John Elway in such – questioning
they've not ruled
Tim
out
Tebow and talking about
two.
Taking another quarterback.
Right.
And, Mike, you say that it could have been the worst thing done in franchise history by not taking him. I don't want to predict it, but it could have been the worst thing to have taken him
right.
with a first-round pick.
Plus, and to be fair to him.
Time will tell. History will tell. I wish him nothing but the best. And, by the way, I saw a jockey commercial. He did a very nice job.
I was glad it was for T-shirts.
It was. He did a good job.
Yep. I'll say this.
He's trimmed the fat a little bit, though. A little thick around the
I've gotten section. That question at Rotary Clubs. I was abused at the Marsh Landing Rotary Club by some big bull gator who just wanted to roll his eyes and talk about all the criminals the Jaguars had brought in. And I reminded him that they'd had quite a few guys arrested in Gainesville. And he got rough with it. Yeah, here's the real deal now. With folks and Tebow, I didn't think it was necessarily fair to bring him here. Because here he
said that
the
last year.
He had to be the savior.
I said that last year that I just hope for his sake that he has an opportunity to flourish as a professional athlete without the added pressure of being the quote-unquote savior of a franchise, which would have been here. And now in Denver or wherever market he could have ended up,
right.
He's going to be allowed to develop and to be whatever it is that he's going to become. And like I said before, I'm a big fan of his. I love the way he carries himself.
Great
I love
family.
The way he plays the game. And I wish him nothing but the best. But, you know, there's one thing that I know, and that is that he was not an unquestioned there was many that doubted where he should be picked. And very few that thought that he should have been a first-round pick. The guy that believed that he should have been a first-round pick was the guy that took him, and his name is Josh McDaniels. And where is Josh McDaniels now?
The offensive coordinator in St. Louis.
I followed this from afar last year.
Well, you're a Florida grad.
I'm a Florida grad, but I was in Indianapolis, so I had very little connection to the Jaguars this time last year, obviously. When I looked up and saw that they had taken Tyson, I thought, somebody there must know what they're doing, because if you pick that guy who was so clearly going to be a guy that nobody in the market or very few people in the market had heard of, they must have known what this guy was about. I thought clearly whoever was running the draft, I knew it was Gene Smith, but I didn't know him from when I was here, must know what he's doing. The organization must have confidence in him. I thought to go away from Tebow showed much more vision at the time than going toward him would have been. And that was just my observation from afar as somebody who had no real connection to the franchise at that point. But I thought it showed a lot that clearly ownership had to be on board with going the other direction. I thought it was a great sign for the franchise that they chose not to take him.
Well, the last thing we'll say on this, hey, Mike, get over it.
Yeah, right. We have no problem defending it because we think it's very defensible. Obviously, though, not to you. We'll take a break for news here at the bottom of the hour. Another half hour of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back to Jaguars This Week. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, and you. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. See, now, last year on this show, it was all Mike. It was all people like Mike. All the time. And we wrote it. And you know, the guy who used to sit in that seat just, he just knifed them mercilessly about Tim.
Hey, Vic?
Oh.
No, come on.
It made for fun.
He's just a cuddly old bear, Vic is.
Yeah, Porcupine. So, phone lines are open. Jump in with some thoughts. We talked about Gene Smith. It's a labor-free evening, by the way. No labor. There's nothing to say anyway.
No, I guess, sometime next week we're expected to kind of hear something from the judge. You know, who knows? You know, just tap me on the shoulder when we got some news on that.
Again, when Wayne was here last week for the conference call with ticket holders, he indicated he thought it would be after the draft. It would be the very end of the month that would hear something.
Yeah.
So, and then of course you have the appellate process. We promised no labor.
We'll hear something before the draft from Judge Nelson.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think we will.
Okay. We'll just follow that one closely.
You know, but to me, the interesting thing is that, you know, that last year at this time, we were talking about teams would be more likely to take risks with quarterbacks in next year's draft, meaning this year, because there would be less financial risk. Well, now you really don't know what that risk is going to be. We kind of expected that this draft would have a price-fixing kind of moniker to it because – you know, there would be a lowering of the rookie dollar amount.
There'd be no more $50 million Sam Bradford. Or
no, which,
million,
you know, to me, I think is just absolutely ridiculous that, you know, an unproven quarterback can get $50 million for signing his name on the dotted line. It's just preposterous. Now, I don't know exactly what they've proposed so far, but we thought that because of that, that money would shrink, that it may even push teams to, hey, say, hey, look, you know, we know that you got to have a franchise star at the quarterback position. We got to start gambling at it. And if the price comes down, the likelihood to gamble goes up. I mean, it's like playing Texas Hold'em with peanuts and playing Texas Hold'em for $1,000. I mean, when you're playing for peanuts.
Yeah, you take all the risks you want.
Yeah.
So what do you do with Cam Newton?
To me, the one thing that I would never risk at that position is character. To me, I mean, that you can't build a franchise with the leader of that franchise having questionable character. It just doesn't work.
Because it's really, I mean, you know, to interrupt you a little bit, it's really never been done, if you think about it. I mean, the questionable character of quarterback, even the guys who have won Super Bowls in recent years who aren't considered that elite. You know, you've got Brady, Manning, Breeze who have won. Everybody sort of says, yeah, they're elite. You know, Roethlisberger, you know, you certainly make the argument he's, you know, his question was there.
Too, yeah. But, I mean, coming out, he wasn't.
Right. I mean, you know, but I was thinking back to even Dilfer and Brad Johnson who won.
No questions with character.
Right.
There.
Clear leaders. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think that's sort of what you're getting at, Jeff, is that even if they're not the star, you got to have character.
You can
at that
have
spot.
Questions about ability at with that position.
Right.
But you cannot question, have any question marks when it comes to character. That's why, and maybe I'm wrong, but Cam Newton, yeah, he's a physical yeah. specimen, but he's got some character concerns, and certainly Ryan Mallett has a big question mark, well, multiple question marks hanging over his head. Boy, I don't gamble when it comes to that position in that category.
Who's the first quarterback off the board?
Would you guess? It's got to be Gabbert, the kid from Missouri. You know, he's got.
If it were me, it'd be Gabbert. But you know,
there's questions about him also. Not character.
Not character
questions,
though. That's what I'm saying. I mean, you can have questions about performance and ability, but you can't have it about character.
There's just not that quarterback. As deep as the class goes, when you get to that top, because luck didn't come out, there is not that guy who is just a hey. This guy is no question the number one overall pick.
If luck came out, he would be the guy.
Oh, he would
there
be
would
the
be
guy.
No debate.
Very few years he wouldn't be the guy.
I mean, here's
how bad do you feel if you're Carolina?
Well, here's the crazy thing. Well, first of all, you'd feel very bad. But here's the crazy thing is that, you know, because of the labor, and this obviously labor-free, we're not going to get into labor, but because of the labor, it may end up not lowering the rookie pay this year. And it may not happen until next year.
Right.
And so can you imagine if you're Luck and you didn't come out and they didn't get this rookie adjustment done until 2012 and you come out in 2012, you're the first pick overall in the draft and you got $15 million to sign. And well, guess what? If you'd come out the year before, you could have gotten 50 plus.
Right.
Ouch. Show me the money. Show me the money I could have lost.
Right.
And I'm looking right now, and there is a former Auburn player who is going to meet with the NCAA next week to discuss allegations that Tigers players received cash. Now, if that story becomes groundbreaking and Cam Newton's name is in it, do the Carolina Panthers back off of their alleged interest?
I mean,
does he slide because of this? Does this
stain I don't know.
Him?
I mean, I'm not sure exactly, you know. The general manager there, what's his name? Marty Herney?
Yeah, Marty Herney.
I don't know how much weight that Marty Herney puts into character. But, I mean, that's the other thing about Cam Newton is that you're not only going to have questions about him, but then that stuff going on at Auburn with those allegations, that's not going away. And it's going to be, I guess, what Reggie Bush has had that
very
dealing,
similar. Very
you know,
similar.
In New Orleans. So do you want to have that added attention to the future of the franchise of your quarterback, having that stuff to deal with too,
but sometimes what I alluded to when we're talking about how Wayne had, you know, the courage, I guess, to back Gene with the Tyson pick last year. A lot of owners go the opposite way. You know, Bud Adams wanted Vince Young. Regardless of whatever questions there might have been in the organization, all indications are he wanted Vince Young coming out. Sometimes owners, some owner will come in and say,
pick to their franchise.
Sets them back 5 years, 6 years. What?
Just the mess. I mean, they took him what, in 06? Yeah. It's been a mess since then. You know, some years he was the starter.
So you wasted 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Right.
11, essentially, because you're not going to have
11.
A quarterback.
Yeah,
not every owner is as willing to back the GM as Wayne was with that last year. And some owner is going to come in and say, boy, Cam's pretty exciting. No, we need, you know, well, we need that guy. Somewhere along the line, that'll happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it usually doesn't work out well.
No, but there's no debating his physical tools. I mean, the guy, he's special.
Vince Young was special, too.
That's the issue.
And that's the great, you know, that quarterback.
And how many years did he do it at Auburn?
Is the great tease.
One.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd rather have a guy that's got a little bit more of a proven track record.
Blaine Junior and, College doesn't do it for you?
And without the question. I mean, it does,
base
but
hits.
It's not enough.
That's Gene's whole thing, right? Base hits.
Well, base hits, and you'll find a home run.
Right.
Don't risk
in the first round.
You know, you may be preaching, and he's not saying that he's going to be happy with base hits, and we're just, you know, we're getting a bunch of okay players.
No.
He's talking about you don't miss, and you hope a base hit turns into extra bases or a homer. Because it'll happen. It will happen.
355-NFL-1. Let's grab Larry, who's downtown, before we take our next break. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you a question about Montel Owens.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we have to wait until the Pro Bowl to find out how good a receiver and blocker he is? You know, I always thought that our coaches would try to get the best out of each player that they could and find that limit or that potential that they have and use them for that. But I don't remember ever seeing Montel catch a pass.
Well, here's the thing, Larry, in that everybody knew that Montel could block and that Montel could catch. But here's the catch. Montel doesn't block better than Greg Jones. Montel doesn't catch and run better than Maurice Jones-Drew. See, that's the thing that you're faced with. If Montel does that for the Jaguars, then he takes the role of Maurice or he takes the role of Greg Jones. Yes, he can do both because he's a football player. I mean, make no mistake. But he's not better at those things than the other guys. So that's why he doesn't do that for the Jaguars.
And Dirk Koetter last night at the evening with the coaches said basically the same thing. Somebody asked Dirk, why don't you have Greg Jones running the ball on third and short? And he said, because Greg Jones is one of the best blocking fullbacks in the NFL.
And Maurice is one of the best short yardage backs in the league.
So all of a sudden, again, to speak to your point, you don't take your best players away from what they do best.
And that, I've always believed that. And you, Brian, you remember when it used to drive me nuts when Tom Coughlin would have an injury.
Yes.
And he would shuffle. So, in other words, he had a right guard hurt, and I'm just throwing positions out here because it happened. I don't remember the names of how it happened, but he would have a right guard hurt, and then because he didn't want to insert the sixth guy in the right guard, he would take the left guard, move him to right guard, and bring in the center to – or, excuse me, move the center to left guard, the left guard to right guard, and bring in the backup center. I mean, you just weaken three positions to accommodate for one injury at one position. Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
Well, to a lesser degree, that's what, you know, people who argue against the zone blitz concept on defense, sort of the same deal. Mm-hmm. When you've got somebody, you know, like a Dwight Freeney, say, in Indianapolis, do you want that pass rusher dropping back in coverage? Not very often. Let your best players do what they do well.
And, you know, to be fair to Montel, if you have him carrying the ball and catching the ball too much, he probably won't excel at what he does well, which is running down the field on special teams
quite as much. I mean, Larry, I'm not trying to devalue the Pro Bowl, but you don't exactly get regular season and postseason effort at the Pro Bowl. You know,
it's easier to shine is what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, it's in some cases it is. And the game is much simpler at the Pro Bowl. There are a bunch of rules that say you can't do this, you can't do that. here's what you're only allowed to do. But, I mean, there's no doubt that Montel's a fine football player. And I thought it was real interesting last year in that I think in some sense that Montel's success got better last year on special teams because of the existence of Kasem. Because, you know, when you looked at the tape, there's no questioning that Kasem got probably just a little bit more attention than Montel. And because Montel was able to get a little less, he was able to do a little bit more as far as in the eyes of the voters and also, process in the locker room.
I'm trying to think if there's another guy on the roster now or in recent memory that's been in a position like Montel where he's a very gifted player, but the guys in front of him are just that much.
I mean,
there's not on this roster.
You know, the best coaches in the league are the coaches that, and you'll hear some coaches say this, but some of them don't really do it. But the best coaches find what their players do best and allow them to do that. And Maurice, the best ball carrier. Greg Jones, the best blocking running back. Montel, probably the best do-all backup and one of your top two special teamers. You let them do what they do best. And Dirk Cutter would be doing the team a disservice if he said, okay, well, we got to get Montel involved as a receiver or we need to get Montel involved as a runner.
All right, folks, before we take the break, two more notices, and that is the Jaguars will tomorrow night be at Palencia Park and Pavilion at 6 o'clock for a Team Teal rally with special teams coordinator Russ Purnell and Tony Baselli, the commissioner of Team Teal. Free food, games, prizes, autographs, more. Jackson, the cheerleaders should be fun. MyTeamTeal.com for more details, and don't forget the Jaguars Bud Light Draft Party presented by PRI Productions. Alumni, players, the Roar, the D-Line, Jackson DeVille. Thursday, the 28th at 6:30 at the Markets at Town Center between Whiskey River and Sweet. This break, then a final short segment of Jaguars This Week, only on News Talk Radio WOKV. All right, about 5 minutes left in the show this evening. Sexton, Loggam, and Osher and Fortunato. You can join us 355-6351. You know, we talk so much about the first round. I mean, it's what the average fan cares about. What about round two for this football team and round three? I mean, these are, if you look at round two for the Jaguars, you know, especially since you've been gone, John, mm-hmm. they've got a lot of really good players. Rasheen Mathis, Maurice Jones-Drew, Daryl Smith. I mean, they have just found a lot of very good players. Just from what you've seen of this draft class, is round two, round three, going to offer the kind of potential for the Jaguars to get impact players? I mean, are you getting that sense talking to people?
All
you got to choose right. I get that.
Right. That's what I always say about the draft. Depth in the draft, if you know what you're doing, you can get guys. And that's kind of how I look at it. You know, is it deep at different spots? I'm not sure anybody knows. You know, if you know what you're doing, you're going to be able to find three or four good football players out of the draft.
Might be your point. Campman was a fifth-round pick. Wasn't right. Mathis a fifth-round pick? Robert Mathis?
Yeah. He was a fifth-round pick. And oftentimes, it's about knowing what fits what you're going to do. It's about and having the confidence to take the guy.
You got a sense of what Mel Tucker's going to do with the defense, Loggy, you know, now that it's his?
I mean, schematically, and, you know, I think you really got to see it to really understand what he's going to do. From what he said to me, he said, we're going to be an attacking defense. But what does that mean?
Well, do you have the players to play that
way? Does it mean that you're going to, you know, bring five and six guys a lot and play man coverage behind it? I don't think you got the personnel on the back end to do that yet. You know, so what does he mean by saying we're going to be an aggressive attacking defense? Is it going to be zone blitzes out of a 4-3? I don't know. I actually talked with Mel briefly before coming in the stadium today, and I said, you know, you enjoying the downtime. And he said, man, he said, really, I have not had any downtime at all. I mean, even though the players aren't here and they're not doing OTAs, you know, with the labor situation going on, Mel said he's grinding. And this is going to be an interesting year for him, you know, because when Mel was in Cleveland, he was kind of under the guidance of Romeo Crennel, you know, who built his level of fame on defense with the New England Patriots. And then since he's been here, he's been under pretty much it's been Jack Del Rio's defense. Well, This year, we're told it's going to be Mel Tucker's defense. So I guess you could say in some ways this is going to be Mel's defense, you know, his first real defense, at least from the public perspective.
Right.
So it's going to be fun to watch him, and I like Mel. I mean, Mel's one of my favorite coaches on the staff, and got a lot of respect for him. I like the guy, and I hope he has great success.
When do you suppose things will slow down for coaches over there? If they can, after the draft, with no OTAs, with no mini camp, you know, I mean, they grind, getting ready for all those things, and then you can't. I mean, I guess you could keep preparing, but
those guys never quit.
Yeah, I mean, at some point that ends and they go into football, and this year it doesn't.
I know, but they just never quit, you know. And then you know, the scary thing is what kind of game plans we're going to see this year because of some of this extra time that these coaches have.
Yeah, but the players won't have the extra time to get ready.
Yeah,
so.
But you know, hey, in reality, though, I mean, the coaches really haven't gotten to the point where they've got the extra time.
Not yet.
Right.
Because, you know, most teams don't start their OTAs up until a little bit before the draft, and we're getting about the point where
they'd
the teams would
now.
Have a few.
Yeah, they'd be here now.
They'd have a few. But most of the teams have gotten to where they would save their OTAs for post-draft so that they can get their rookies involved. And that's I think, is where you'll start to see what I always call the overcoaching routine. Because, you know, at that when you get the downtime like that, I had a coach that you guys know, Greg Robinson. And Greg used to drive me nuts because he was the mad scientist, like from Back to the Future, and he would come up with all these crazy ideas about how he was gonna out-scheme them, and they didn't work, you know, because he was trying to beat them with the scheme instead of to beat them with the players that were in the scheme. And I'm like, when I was in New York and Greg was the defensive coordinator, I was dropping in pass coverage, and I was playing a deep third in this one defense, and I'd say, hey, Greg, I'm not trying to brag, but I'm the best pass rusher that we got, and I'd like to rush the passer. And this was, of course, post-Dennis Byrd injury because he was a better pass rusher than I ever was. But he had me doing all these crazy things, and to me that was a perfect example of just overcoaching.
Mel's talking about keeping it simple, and I think that's going to be the key, and I think that's important, and I like hearing that.
Thanks for coming in, Osh. Appreciate it. Loggy, Joe, and thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week for more Jaguars This Week, only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.